listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our show tonight, Your Ultimate Life, here on LA Talk Radio, the show that we've designed to help with creating a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy, and all kinds of encouragement and excitement, because we sure need it in the things that we've got going on today. I've got a special guest tonight, Marcia Martin. I'm grateful to have her. Marcia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kellen. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Well, that's fun. So I learned, you know, we met a little while ago, and I had a chance to learn some fun stuff about you that I'll bet most people in the universe don't know. I'm sure there are many that do, but lots don't. And so I'm going to start with not a question for you to say all that stuff, because I don't do introductions, and we'll just sort of reveal all the coolness as we go along. So the first question that I want you to think about, and don't be modest, but I want you to tell the audience how Marcia intentionally adds good to the world.
Oh my goodness, Kellen, that is sweet of you to say. My whole life has been about contribution to the world when I look at it. And my life is long, so there's a lot of contribution. I was fortunate enough to be in the right place at the right time in the early 70s. I met a man named Werner Erhard, and it was the beginning of the human potential movement. I was in San Francisco, a hippie, gorgeous girl out to spread love, live life. And we started an organization called EST, which became Landmark Forum. And I became the vice president at the very early age of 24. And literally we went from 30 people in a seminar room to millions of graduates worldwide. And as a result of that, of course, many thought leaders and transformational trainers have not only been my students and have gone on to fame, and I've been able to work with them, but I've been able to contribute insights and enlightenment and wisdom to many, many, many people. So that's what my life has been about from the time I've been just a young girl, Kellen.
So that's interesting. It's actually fantastic. So what is the connection? And maybe there isn't one, but let's see if there is. What is the connection between a girl who's 24 in San Francisco? I was born in San Francisco and grew up in the Bay Area. So I actually remember the Summer of Love, 67, and the hippie funeral and the whole nine yards because I was there. And so were you, apparently. So anyway, what is the connection between this contribution piece, 24-year-old girl floating around San Francisco as a hippie, and then jumping into this really intense EST and Landmark thing, which is, yes, about human potential and growth, but was going at it in a very sort of hardcore, confrontational way, at least to start with. Draw me that parallel. What draw you into that? What drew you into that? So it was like, oh, yeah, this is what I want to do.
Well, it didn't start that way. You have to go back a few years before EST. So when I was a young girl, when I was just barely 19, I apprenticed with my aunt, who is a clairvoyant healer and an esoteric astrologist. And this woman was about, she called herself a light worker, and her purpose was to teach people love and to bring people together and for them to understand their inner power and their connectedness. And she told me that was my purpose in life. And it sounded good to me to spread love. And I think I have to even go back a little earlier, because I remember one time I had a pretty rough childhood, and my father was an alcoholic and a really just a lost soul and took it out on everybody else, and very angry and just terrible things that I went through in my childhood. But I remember watching my mom and dad fight, and I can remember this so clearly. I think I was about six, and I saw them, and I remember saying to myself, why don't people know how to love each other? I need to do something about that. So this went back way a long time, that this is kind of where I've been coming from. And so my aunt taught me how to meditate. She taught me about all of the energetic laws of the universe and your body and your mind. She taught me how to heal. Of course, I didn't tell anybody that I could do magic back then. I just kept it a secret. But so by the time I met Werner, who was not doing S at the time, he was doing a training called Mind Dynamics. And I took the very first Mind Dynamics course in San Francisco. There were 30 of us. And that was a very, very spiritual kind of training and very meditative and very inner kinds of working. It wasn't the kind of confrontational training that S became. And S became that over years. It didn't start that way necessarily. And so what I thought was, oh, I see what's happening. Werner and Mind Dynamics is going to teach people the things that my aunt taught me. How to create, how to be responsible for my future, how to actually bring things into existence, and how to know who I am and to know my inner power and to know my connectedness and to know what I could do in the world. And so I really didn't take Mind Dynamics with Werner that first course because I thought that I needed it. I wanted to take it because I wanted to help him bring it to the masses. I thought this was a way for people to wake up and know who they really are. So it didn't start off that confrontational. In fact, probably one of the reasons that I left EST in 1980 was it got to a point where the organization itself almost became the thing that we had been promising people we were freeing them from. So here we were freeing them from, you know, opening them up, showing them how they could be free and understand themselves. Yet we were creating an organization that was so controlling by the time that I left that it was almost the thing that we were telling people that we were helping them get out of.
Well, so that's interesting. I didn't know in the beginning it was the difference. You know, my first understanding of it was the what it became after a few years. Yeah. So I'll bet. I mean, you didn't tell people you could do magic. And in the days of San Francisco and that whole movement, you know, that quote weirdness would fit right in. And then not so much. And now here we are, you know, a few minutes later, 50 years, 60 years later, and we're having this whole revolution of a push and a growth of people using the same words and waking up and it not being, you know, nut farm stuff and realizing that there's some actual both science and truth behind all that. That must seem really interesting, you know, watching this whole circle come back around to the same place.
I feel like I've been there through the whole arc, through the very beginnings of something, taking it to this profound cultural phenomenon, actually, through a revolution almost, and being a key architect of the evolution of a movement. And certainly didn't think that that was going to happen when I was there. It was just in the moment. It was a beautiful thing. When I left EST, it was very interesting because many of the thought leaders like Tony Robbins and Jack Canfield and Bob Hoffman and John Hanley, who had organizations like LifeSpring and different organizations, came to me and wanted me to do the same thing for them that I had done for EST. And so my whole life really has been, in fact, some people call me the Forrest Gump of transformation because I always seem to be at the beginning or the pivotal moments of these different kinds of movements and organizations that became what Human Potential Movement was all about. So it's been my work my whole life. And now so I take that into corporations. What I really do now, I love, because I go in and I work with championship leaders who run large companies who really need to know these things that we learned in the Human Potential Movement. And it's almost like I come in and they're separated and they're fighting with each other and they're competitive. And then there's a team when I leave. It's really magical.
Well, I love magic, and that's why I use the word alchemist in the whole description thing, because that's part science and part magic. So when you left that, because it was, I guess, changing direction or losing original bearings or whatever, and then you went and founded or participated in the growth and founding of other movements that were subsequent movements of growth and potential. And is that, I mean, that would have been 80, and so that's still 40 years ago. Walk me through a little bit of your own personal evolution. And I say that because I realize you started at a young age, but still, over time, things happen to us. We learn, we grow, we reinterpret or re-understand things. So in your effort to teach love, as you thought about when you were six, talk to me about that, how that has changed or evolved or grown in the years in between.
Well, I did a combination of things. It's a very interesting. In fact, I've written a book, and it's coming out July 17th, and it really is the untold story of how all of that happened in the beginning, because nobody's ever really shared how we built EST, what it was like then. I mean, I was back in the human potential movement when Michael Murphy was just first starting Esalon, the Institute, and when Jose Silva was doing his work.
Mind control, right?
Yeah, all of that. So, you know, I've seen it from the very, very beginning all the way through to where now we have digital networks and everybody's a thought leader and somebody's always telling somebody else self-help and self-improvement. The whole industry is like $48 billion now. So it's huge. And I went through various ups and downs. And I think part of why I wanted to write the book was not just the history for people to really know how it happened, because it's magical. And when you understand that you can have a dream and bring it to fruition and make it big, that you really can be one person and cause many, many, many things to happen. I think when people understand the story of how that all happened, it would be very powerful for them to know. But for me personally, it was also coming to terms with my own power. It was coming to terms with patterns that I had from when I was a child. You know, I always thought you had to do what the man said because my dad was scary. And so it took a while for me to develop my own voice. And I learned a lot in going through these kinds of movements where certain charismatic leaders are more interested in them giving you their answer. I'm about having it be safe enough that you can discover what your answer is for yourself.
I'd like to dig into that just a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
Because there is such a difference between somebody having an answer that they suggest or even impose. You know, someone who's seeking can be vulnerable. And so someone showing up that, you know, is more enlightened or something, yes, has a position of power and can impose ideas and exercise even damaging influence, because it limits or squashes a person's own ability to trust their intuition and do that. And so I want you to talk a little bit more about the difference between what you said, the difference between someone who has some great stuff sharing it or imposing it versus creating a safe and loving space where a person learns to develop their own intuition and trust their own voice and wisdom. Talk a little bit more about that.
It's an interesting conundrum, and it's a balancing act, because when you think about it, transformation is the light and the dark. Consciousness has a shadow side to it. So if you're not really responsible and you know who you are and you take responsibility for choosing and making your own choices, if you just give up your choice to someone else because they're the leader, pretty soon you could be going down a path that you didn't even want to go down. And you can see it now in what's happening in our world today. These charismatic leaders are just demanding that everybody agree with them. And people are not even thinking anymore. They're just saying, oh, that person knows because they're famous or they're powerful or they have more money or they're... It's scary, because when you're inside of an organization and if it gets so big, and EST was like that, it got so big. You know, we were dined and wined and dined by some of the great artists and politicians, and you know, people were asking me answers for themselves. And I thought, I'm just a kid. And this big executive wants to know what I think. It was heady. It was very heady. You know, I met all the stars in Hollywood. I met political greats. I met scientists. And I noticed that as I went along later in life, that the leaders, if they weren't careful, it would be easy to get everybody just to go along with them. rather than really caring about awakening a person so that they had the ability to find their own answer. It's easier to tell a person, here's what you need to do, rather than to have a person ask a question of a person and say, like, who are you and what's in the way and what do you think? It takes a little bit more time and attention.
It takes a lot more, especially when people have learned not to trust themselves and have been pushed down. You know, almost were taught from the cradle, you know, parents and grades and failures and punishments and betrayals. And the list is long that we're not enough and that we're not to be trusted and we're not okay. And so, yeah, just tell me what to do. I mean, clients that are like that. Yeah, I know. Just tell me what to do. And the answer all the time is, I have no idea what to do.
Yeah, exactly, right?
I have no freaking clue what you should do. What I do know is that I can help you connect with intuition and discover what is in your own highest good and hopefully also the highest good for everybody else. And that, you know, that idea of being true to yourself, discovering your true self and all that woo-woo crap that we all spout that I believe in, that, you know, teaching someone to learn to trust that can be so terrifying if they are used to feeling they're not enough and looking to somebody else somewhere to, you know, give them the plan. And so that's so.
Add to it, Kellen, that when you're in a group and you have a community, it's like a family. And when everybody's saying it is a particular way and going along with it, and if you think it's not that way, or you think that something is out and that it should be looked at differently, but nobody is willing to stand up for you or agree with you, it's scary. You get ostracized from your own. That's what I'm saying. Things become cultish and leaders become cult leaders because they're more interested in the fame or the money or the power than they are really in the mission that they started off to accomplish. And I found it very difficult because at times in my life, I had to make a decision to leave. And it was lonely and scary. And and I think it's about patterns too. We all have these patterns, like you're saying, you grow up and you're told this and that, and you don't feel worthwhile or whatever it is that happened to you. And so you have to wrestle with those patterns to find out who you are also. And then when somebody comes along and they're charismatic and they're fun and you're experiencing things you never experienced before and things are starting to work. And then you start to see, well, maybe it's not as good as you thought, or maybe something needs to be changed, but there's so many people going in the direction that you can't have your voice be heard, or you're afraid to speak. It's a very interesting journey. And I found that's for me, some of those questions haven't been questions that I've thought about. They've been questions that I've lived. It's like, what's the difference between influence and control, for example?
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and when does a person, when, if you want fame and power and money, and that person can help you, when do you start being more about what you need and what you want than what they need? When what you're selling them is you're selling them what they need. It's just
right.
You have to be so careful that you can manage the shadow side.
So let's dig into that a little bit. Today, at least, and it might be because I'm in the coaching world, and so I, you know, confirmation bias, I see what I'm looking for, but I meet a lot of people who have the sense that there is some degree of awakening or some degree of people saying, you know, this isn't right. You know, we need to find something better or more. And people describe it all kinds of different ways, 3D, 5D, 27D, and, you know, ascension of all this stuff, whatever. You talk about it in a lot of ways. But what do you think about that? Is there some movement in that direction, or am I making that up because I'm in that universe?
No, I don't think you're making it up at all. You know what one of the gifts I think I have is I think I can make things simple for people, even profound things. And I've been in so many trainings with so many conceptually intellectual, you know, complicated teachers that have, I'm not sure what they're telling you. You feel good. You get out of the training. You go, I feel so good. I have no idea what the fuck I just learned. Right.
Right.
I don't know if I'm supposed to swear or not, but it's hard for me not to sometimes. But it's like there's three faces is how I see it. You have the face that you pretend that you are. We all pretend we're okay. We all pretend we know what we're doing. We all pretend that we're confident. We've all pretend that we've got it together. Well, why do we pretend? Because there's a face behind that, the second face, which is who we're afraid that we are. We're pretending we're okay because we're afraid we might not be. We are pretending we know what we're doing because we are really afraid we don't know what we're doing. We're pretending to be confident because we're afraid that we're not enough. And there's a third face. And I say that's the face of who you really are. But the face of who you really are looks exactly like what you're pretending, because you really are perfect. You really are totally able. You really are loving. You really are loved. You really are worthwhile. But when you're in touch with the knowing that and the really coming from that, it's a totally different experience than when you're pretending it. But the only way that you can get to it, to access it and be in touch with it, is to let go of your pretense. And when you let go of your pretense, you're stuck right in the middle of your fear. It really feels like you're failing when you're in that face. It really feels like you suck. It really feels like you're not worthwhile. And what my work is I have a way. People trust me. I think it's because I really look, I connect with who they really are. I don't connect with their pretense and I don't connect with their fear. I really see the glorious part of who they are. It's how I see. And when I connect with that, people trust me. And that gives me some space to allow the person to feel good enough that they'll drop their pretense and tell me all their fears. And they'll actually be in the middle of experiencing it. And I can be with them in conversation and in coaching or in processing or in training in such a way that they can make it through the fear and discover who they really are. And once you connect with who you really are, it's like a pinprick of light in the dark. You see it. No matter how small you connect with it, it's enlightening. It's a breakthrough. And from there, then they can pretty much do it on their own. They just have to have that one little opening is what I've discovered.
Why do you think, like, every baby is born without all these fears, without all this contextual nonsense and noise? And we accidentally, I think, maybe on purpose, but we accidentally do our very best to beat that out of them and eliminate their innate curiosity and brilliance and genius and love and coming from love and all those beautiful things that we say we have to learn how to do now. We started there. So what is it? What is it about our universe, world, situation that we have right now that makes it so that we do that? Like, why are we creating this poison that we then have to undo, go find the antidote for?
Boy, you got to the core of what my book is about, because it's about patterns. When you think about it, who is teaching you the things that you're not worthy is your parents. There's three main sources of input to any child. It's your family or your parents. Mm-hmm. That's where you get to know what life is about and kind of what to do. Your educators or your teachers, that's where you learn how to succeed in life. And your priests or your spiritual leaders, whatever you go to or whatever is given to you by whoever is in charge of what it all means. Okay, mm-hmm. Now think about it. You're a 2-year-old, you're a 3-year-old, you're a 4-year-old, you're sitting there and somebody comes up to you and says, you have to. I remember my mother told me that I had to let the boys win. She was really mad at me because I was always winning the race. And she told me, no, you can't win. You have to let the boys win or, you know, they're not going to like you. And I remember another thing that she said, there's no such word as can't. Well, whatever you're given, whether it's positive or negative, whatever you're given by those big people when you're two or three or four, you don't say, thanks, Dad. Thanks, Mom. I really appreciate how you see the world. I can see it works for you. I, on the other hand, have a different perspective and I choose to live life a different way, but I really appreciate the input.
Yeah, no.
No, you say, oh, that's how it is. And you take it in as an agreement, and that agreement that you're agreeing with becomes a belief. And pretty soon that belief has a social justice system for you that when you go against what you believe is right or wrong, you feel out of sorts. And you feel you have to make up an excuse of why you did it so that it feels good again. Do you see? You kind of justify and put it back in so it's all balanced. And I think the purpose of childhood is so you have something to work on when you're an adult. And I really do. I think the other thing that the purpose of childhood is, it's a teacher for the adults. And we have it mixed up. We think we're the teacher of the children. And we think that, you know, we're learning all of this good stuff when we're little so that we'll be okay. We're learning how to screw it up and how it all doesn't work and all the lies about it, so we can untangle it by the time we have an adult, you know, that we're an adult, so that we have a puzzle to work on.
Well, you know what happens? We end up not doing that very well. Because if you look at the... And I'm generalizing, but, you know, what we hear, what we see, even personally or in the public square, there is so much of not that, you know, so much of the opposite of, gee, thanks for your input. I've got a different view. And having that be an okay conversation, you know, that has to be rebellious. That has to be negative. That has to be punished or sanctioned in some way, because you have that. And, you know, the instructional paradigm is so, like, maybe the role of parents is to see, to understand, my job is to screw this up as little as possible instead of help them assume my values. You know, let's discover who you are. I mean, I look at my own mistakes raising kids and stuff like that. And if I were able to do that again, which I can't, but if I were, you know, the whole approach would be, well, I don't know, let's just discover who you are.
Yeah.
And what this is about for you. You know, I've got mine sort of half-assed figured out, and now we're going to help you. I've been given the blessing and opportunity to help you figure out who you are. So let's get at it.
But I think what you just said doesn't happen very often. I don't think many adults have it half figured out. I think that they are so stuck in their patterns and their righteousness or their beliefs, and they're like lost. And so it's a lost person trying to teach another person. Well, you're going to teach them how to lose themselves. You're not going to teach them how to find themselves. So it's a conundrum. That's, you know, like I've been betrayed by friends, people I trusted. I've lost all my money at different times. I've been divorced. I've lost a child. There are many things that have happened to me, and it's an interesting thing how I first developed, because I got the answer, not the answer, but my answer of who I was. I found myself first, then I had life. Because I started this work from the time I'm 12, I'm meditating. When I was 12, I read Atlas Shrugged, and it changed my life. Right. Like, oh my God, Dagny Taggart, you really can be purposeful. You really can do something. I mean, so there, when I was trained by my aunt, she was teaching me how to be powerful, or how life works and how energy works and how one creates, before I'd ever had anything bad happen to me. And when you think about it, what usually happens with people is they have a breakdown and then they have some kind of insight into the way life should be, or they have a loss, or they have a total failure. And then they say, I better look at my life. I better do something different. Right. That didn't happen to me, except for my childhood. Yes. I was terrorized when I was a child. I wasn't sexually molested, but I was yelled at and, you know, it's scary. My dad was really scary. And he did things to me that made me want to prove that I was okay. So I went through that a bit, but I didn't have, you know, I didn't have any big failures. Life was really good. I was a teenager. And when I got all of this information, so what happened to me was almost the reverse. Is I went through all of those kinds of things that we go through, only I went through it from a perspective of I know who I am. And so how I looked at it from the very beginning, from the very, very beginning, is this must be a gift. I must need this experience somehow. Somehow I've created this, or I've brought this to myself, or I've attracted this so that I could learn a lesson. There's something here that I need to know. There's some purpose in this. I didn't think of it as poor me, I'm a victim, or I have to defend myself, or they're bad, or blame them. And it's interesting because, you know.
Right. That's the view of the, you know, there's a pony in here somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? Of the whole thing. So I want to talk about what made you decide to write the story. We talked about books the other day before we did this, but what is it that moved you to write this in a book? Is a book, you know, so it's a monologue, and so we have to construct it with the best chance of someone following through and getting the most out of it. What moved you to do that?
For 50 years, people have been asking me to write my story. And you got to understand that 50 years ago, they wanted me to write it. Then 40 years ago, they wanted me to write it. Then 30 years ago, they wanted me to write it. And for the last at least 35 years, I've been telling all the groups that I teach, someday I'm going to write a book. But what happened was I got to a point where I realized that people needed, at least in my particular domain, because I taught millions of people,
right,
touched millions of people. I personally trained over 350,000 people myself in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I've led groups of 100 and groups of 1,000 and groups of 5,000. People have looked up to me and asked me how to have a better life. And I realized that they had it a little wrong about their history, and that history is valuable, that people should know their history. I was there. I know what happened. I know how it came about. And it's almost like there are certain people in the human potential movement and all of these self-help kinds of trainings now who don't know where it came from, who don't know where they came from, who don't know where the movement came from. And it's really important, I think, that they do. I think history is a very important thing. And also, mostly they got it wrong. Just like when you said, I thought Est was just totally confrontational, you know?
That's right. Right?
No, that wasn't how it started out, and that wasn't what happened. And I've seen many of those movements, many leaders who got to the place where all of a sudden they realized they had thousands of people listening to them, and what it does to change the person, and how that person started out, and then what that person became. So I've been given almost a gift of seeing what the warning signs are when you get so encaptured by somebody else's answer. And I'm not saying people don't have good answers and that you shouldn't have coaching and that you shouldn't have coaches. I think that that's really almost necessary, that you look to someone to be a mentor for yourself, that that's a really good thing in life. But when you just take it and don't consider it yourself and put it through your own understanding for your own self and then choose whatever that answer is yourself, if you just take it and say, oh, well, they said this, so that's the way it is, that can be so damaging. And I think some of the teachers need to know this, that they need to stop having the answer for other people. They need to be the custodians, not the, what do you, it's just like, I mean, I just, I thought it was time for people to consider this conversation that is what my book is about.
So The reason you wrote it is because it was time to do it. So tell us about the book, what's in it, and you've told some of it already. So tell us more about it so we can understand what it is.
I just got the proof.
Okay.
It's a real book. So now
real life book, right? Yeah.
This one isn't for sale. It's going to be for sale July 17th on Amazon. It's called Sex, Power, and Transformation. And it's the untold story of Est and the human potential movement from the woman who helped make it happen. And it's my story. It's my experience. It's what it meant to me and how it happened to start a cultural phenomenon and to be a part of a revolution as a key architect from a young age, and to take the human potential movement through all of the many years and all of the different programs and what I learned. And it goes through Hollywood. It goes through business. It goes through self-help. It goes through relationships and divorce, and it goes through a lot of things that all people go through. I think it's an interesting story.
Well, good. It would be not so good if you thought it was a horrible story, right? So armed with what you were armed with from a young age, from your aunt, and the learnings that you had, and the assumption that things are a gift, and you mentioned earlier, well, there were ups and downs and betrayals and all those kinds of things. And I'm sure you've thought about this. What's the difference? Like, what would have happened? Speculate. If you hadn't had the kind of grounding, and because most people don't, as you mentioned, it's yours was backwards. You started with that. I don't know, backwards, maybe forwards, whatever. But you started that way, and most people don't. And so they go through those things first. So talk about that difference. What would your journey be like in terms of getting to a place of discovery like other people have to, me or other? I didn't have that stuff early. I had other stuff that wasn't helpful early. So think about it backwards, because that's who you're talking to. You're talking to a lot of people who haven't had that experience the other way around.
Well, I think one of the things that I learned along the way, and I knew from the beginning, is you can never get enough of what you really don't want. That's one of the things I learned from Werner. And what that means is, you get a lot of houses, you get a lot of money in the bank, you get a lot of women, you get a lot of marriages, you get a lot of kids, you get a lot of degrees. All of those things are not what you really want. And so you can never get enough of all that stuff to be satisfied and fulfilled. You can never get enough of what you really don't want. And what I realized as I look back now, is I got what was really important first. I knew from the beginning money wasn't going to make me happy. I had to create happiness myself and bring happiness to the table. That I knew that I didn't get happy from something. I brought happiness to the table. I learned from a very young age, I'm not a victim. So I don't have to blame anybody. I'm not at the effect. I have choice. I'm free. If I get in touch with who I really am, and who I really am is part of a whole, and the whole is connected. And when you come from that connection, you can create magic. But when you separate yourself and you pretend that you're not enough or you're not connected, then you aren't able to affect things. You aren't able to create. And it looks like you're a victim. It feels like you're a victim. And I'm not saying that victim kinds of things don't happen to me. I mean, I've been at the effect. But it's not that I hold it, that it makes me not able, or it makes me less than. It's an experience that I'm going through, and I can be powerful in the experience of being at the effect, just like I can be powerful in the experience of being at cause. So when I know that, everything changes. And I think if I didn't know that in the beginning, I would have been like I know a lot of people are, feeling left out, feeling at the effect, feeling wronged, it turns it around in a way that you can handle life. The event doesn't make you happy or sad. It's who you are when you bring it to the event that makes you happy or sad. The event's just the river. And I tell this, you know, to my students, you can't change the river. Why are you trying to change the river? How many times do I coach relationships and he says it's her fault and she says it's his fault? And he wants her to change and she wants him to change. Well, you can't change the river. The river is the way it is. That guy over there, you can't change them. The only person you can ever change, ever, 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 is yourself. So when anybody looks at something and says, okay, I'm going, that person has to change in order for this to work out, you're up against something that you can't do.
So some people like it. Some people want to argue for the limitations because it takes responsibility off of them. Because as long as I'm blaming you, I don't have to do anything. It's not my fault. And the fact that I can't change you, I tried and tried and tried and I was patient and you know the drill. Yeah. So when someone comes to you,
the payoff, right? There are payoffs.
It is the payoff, because then I'm not responsible.
Yeah, but what do they give up? If you get the payoff, it's always you get to be right. That's the payoff.
Yeah.
You get to be right or make somebody else wrong, or you get to justify a behavior, right? You get to be really a creep. Because it's justifiable that
It's like when you talk to somebody about forgiveness, they understand that all good, and except when you personalize it and you go into some circumstance where it would be really beneficial for them energetically and for their own creativity to forgive something. And then it's like, everybody else except no way. I mean, that one, you know, and there's that kind of thing, right?
What do you lose? If you get the payoff, and the payoff is always being right, or making someone wrong, or being able to justify a behavior, what are you giving up for the payoff? It's always love, health, happiness, and full self-expression. And so when people really realize what's important, you can never get enough of what you really don't want. Money doesn't make you happy. Fame doesn't make you happy. There's something else: love, health, happiness, self-expression. When you get to your grave, I mean, what did Steve Jobs say at the end? When he said, you know, I'm here in the hospital dying, and it doesn't matter if I have a $500 watch or a $3 watch. They both tell the time.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember that, or I've read that thing.
Yeah, a fancy car or a, you know, shitty car. It still's going to take you to wherever you're going.
So let's talk for a minute about what, you know, I have a goal of reaching 300 million people. You have a goal of helping with, you know, your efforts and methods to help people connect to that truth and quit giving up their sovereignty and quit buying into payoffs that aren't satisfactory. What are we going to do right here, right now, on the 1st of July, 2025, to make a mark, to change the world, to give people the hope, the truth, the connection that they are sovereign and they have the ability to bring whatever they want to the table instead of the leftovers or the stories or the victimness?
Like what? Well, I think a real thing to have people grow is to have them be willing to be still and to see the value in meditation. And to be still takes some time. So when you ride a bicycle, you don't get on and just ride. You have to fall down a few times. You have to practice. But I've had so many people say, oh, I can't meditate. I tried it. Well, okay, thank you. But maybe you haven't gotten to the point where you practice enough where it's actually working, which is what you have to do. Because we learn through two things. We learn through our mind by understanding. And we learn through our body. Our body learns just like our mind does. And the body has a way of learning that's different than understanding. The body learns through practice. You must teach the body to do it by doing it. You can't bypass the failures. You have to teach the body. And so if you're going to meditate, and the stillness is where the answers are. So if I could say what would make a difference to people here July 1st, in your goal of 300 million would be to say, take 5 minutes a day, close your eyes and be still and notice what happens. Okay, do you get crazy? Do you have 100 thoughts? Do you, you know, want you, you just have to move? You say, this is stupid. What do you think? What do you feel? Okay, be aware of that. Okay, tomorrow, take 5 minutes, do it again. And notice again, what happens this time? I promise you, if you were still for 5 minutes, even 2 or 3 times a week, for 2 or 3 months, you would start to hear yourself, your real self. But you, it does, you know, that could wake people up, just that simple little exercise. So that's one thing.
No, I love that. And what I, when I talk to people about meditation, they, when they say, well, it's not working or whatever, or yeah, I'm doing it wrong, or it must not be working because I'm doing it wrong. What I tell them is, did you try? Yes. Okay, then you did it right. So get the wrong off the table.
Yeah.
You did it. That's the right or wrong. You did it? Yeah. Okay, you win.
Yes.
And so did you do it again? You win. I thought 1,000 things. I couldn't be quiet. That's a fine. You win anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole thing about letting thoughts evaporate and all that stuff. I agree with you. Just our ability, it's a curious thing, because universally we all have the experience that the intuition, the still small voice, it's always, you know, it's quiet. It rarely makes noise above a whisper. And when we're, when life's so full of white noise or whatever, we just can't hear it.
And you never will be able to hear it if you're not still. You have to get still first.
So I want to make sure we have a chance to find all the good things for Marsha Martin. So if somebody wants to find Marsha Martin, the founder of the universe, not really, but some piece of the universe, where would we go to find out more?
My own mind.
Yeah, no, no, but it's fine that you were a big piece of that thing. So where would people go to find out more Marsha if they want some more Marsha?
Yep, they can go to my website, which is marciamartin.com, and it's MarciaMartin.com. And also, they can get on the list to pre-order the book, because the book comes out July 17th, and the book is really good. I mean, it really is good. And they can go to marciamartin.com/the book.
So if they go to marciamartin.com, there'll be a thing they can click on to go to the book. Why did you give it the name Sex, Power, and Transformation?
Well, it was kind
what
of
drove that.
Well, when I first started to write the book in my head, I always thought I'm going to call it Sex, Drugs, and Transformation, because that's the, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, sex, drugs, right, and rock and roll. And I thought it's really sex, drugs, and transformation. But then when I started thinking about it, it really was more about sex, power, and transformation. And so it kind of evolved to that particular. And sex, it's not like this book is about a bunch of lewd sexual acts. It's not that. But there's sexual manipulation in power.
Yeah, there is.
And there's it's the relationships of control, which is also sexual. The men and the women, the different things of who has the power. And so I just thought it was catchy and it probably would sell. And it described what I was trying to talk about. So it won in all three areas.
All right. So what is the last thing you want to share that I didn't ask you?
I would like to share that it's all going to work out okay. And if people, and another thing I just want to share this is, the best thing I can tell people is get centered first before you act, because we all get triggered. We all get upset. We all get off center. And when we're off center, all of our patterns take over and we start to react. And so one great mantra can be center first, then act. So when you're upset, don't talk to somebody and tell them you want to break up. Or don't push the button and send that stupid email that you were just about to send. Center first and get back to present time, centered, open, present, connected, and then you'll be able to choose rather than react. I think that that's really, really important. And the other thing I would say is to experience life as if it's a gift, because it really is. Everything is a gift. And if you experience it that way, it will look different and feel different, and you'll make different choices when it comes your way, whatever the experience is. Welcome the experience.
I love that. Marcia, thank you for being here with us tonight and sharing your experience, your journey, your book, your wisdom, your website, and the things that you've been through. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you too, Kellen. God bless you.
God bless you too. You bet. So I want you to go back and listen to some of this and go check out that book. She really was there in the beginning of the human potential movement and has lots of insight and interesting thoughts. And the idea about slowing down and taking time to just be still. I just am a total disciple of that idea, and I do it and have been for years, decades even. Meditation, call it being present. But do that, because it is in that place that you can connect with that third face, she said, the truth of who you are, the peace that allows you to trust yourself and love yourself. And you will find there the gifts and tools that let you create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.